Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Constant Chaos. It's Rachel and Christy, still in quarantine. We are very excited to welcome a guest today, Dr. Karen Wilson, and we can tell you a little bit about her.
Hi, everyone. This is Christy. So we are so excited to have Dr. Karen Wilson here today. She is a clinical neuropsychologist and the director of West LA Neuropsychology and an assistant clinical professor, which is voluntary, in the Medical Psychology Assessment Center at the Semmel Institute of Neuroscience and Behavior at UCLA. She specializes in the assessment of neurodevelopmental disorders in children and adolescents and has extensive experience evaluating children and adults who present with neurological, medical, and psychiatric disorders. She is the founder of childnexus.com, which is a web application that we're going to talk more about that provides information to parents who have children struggling with neurodevelopmental or social emotional issues. She has a lot of degrees and it sounds like a great amount of experience. So welcome, Dr. Wilson, and thank you so much for being here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Rachel and Christy. I'm really excited about being here and I'm just really appreciative of all the work that you both are doing.
So can Great. You tell us a little bit about Child Nexus?
Sure. Child Nexus is a web-based platform that I created to connect parents who have kids who are struggling with learning, processing, or social emotional issues with professionals who can provide those services. Oh, and also it has articles where people can search for content related to struggles their child may be experiencing or support in terms of strategies that they can utilize to help their kids.
Nice.
Yes.
Very valuable.
And so where does that information populate? How do you work in that system?
So parents can go and access the information. It's available. We update the information pretty regularly. Right now we have two articles up there on parenting in the midst of a pandemic, right? Where people are looking for resources. Yes. And so we try to address issues a lot of parents are experiencing and provide, again, strategies for navigating some difficult behaviors and some difficult challenges.
Great. So you do the bulk of your work then, it sounds like, is in assessing children and adolescents. Is that true?
Yes. That is pretty much what I do. So I do neuropsychological assessments. In my practice, we also do psychoeducational evaluations. And really, when parents are coming in to see me, they've been referred by either their school or their pediatrician, or they've heard by word of mouth from another parent that I do these evaluations to help uncover, you know, the why in terms of the difficulties children are experiencing, and then really finding out what would be appropriate in terms of intervention to really help these kids be more successful and to have better experiences.
And so talk about what are some of the interventions that come up in these scenarios? Can you give an example maybe?
Yeah, the intervention, they vary depending on what kids are struggling with. But, you know, for example, with kids who are really having difficulty with language-based issues, it might be speech and language intervention or therapy. It might be a behavioral therapy if there are some problematic behaviors. For some kids, it might be educational therapy that would be focused on the specific area of difficulty. I'm thinking things like dyslexia or difficulties with written expression or mathematics. So it really depends on the difficulties a child or an adolescent is experiencing, because the treatment has to kind of be informed by what the presenting issues are.
So it's all over. It could be all over.
It can be all over.
Yeah.
A combination of a number of those things, right?
There's
so much, you know, what we call comorbidity, where kids, I rarely see kids that are just presenting with one thing. It's usually at least two areas of struggle that need intervention.
Right. Yeah. And I know, like with my son, he has ADHD, and I knew when he was younger, we were able, because there's a huge comorbidity with dyslexia and ADHD, we looked for it when he was young. So I don't know, do you see a lot of that, or is that a comorbidity you see a lot of?
I do. I see a lot of comorbidity with dyslexia and ADHD. And usually if kids are identified as having ADHD early on and they're not yet learning to read, I say, let's watch them very closely, because again, the earlier we intervene, the better the outcomes. And so we want to get in there as soon as possible, again, to give kids the best possibility of success.
Right.
How much do you work with the school the child is in?
I work with the schools pretty much with every evaluation that I do. Unless of course the child is homeschooled, because the interventions that I'm going to be writing into that report after doing the evaluation has to be carried out. A lot of those interventions have to be carried out in a school environment. And so the teachers have to be informed about why a child is struggling as well, because sometimes they don't know. They see behaviors or they see struggles, but they may not know what the underlying issue is. And so part of my job is to educate the schools about this child's profile and then give them recommendations in terms of what they can do to support this child at school.
Are you working mostly public or private schools?
I do a combination of both.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And do you refer out to private schools, or do you find the children are already at private school when they find you?
It really depends on the school, and it depends on, you know, the child in terms of, you know, what that struggle looks like for that particular child. For some kids, they're at an independent, a private school, and the academic demands are very high, mm-hmm. and they're really struggling to meet those demands. And sometimes they may not have the resources available to provide the support that a child needs. And so then there's a conversation with the parents about, let's look at alternative learning environments for your child. And that's a hard conversation to have with some parents.
Right.
And for some parents, they're at public schools, and that is not appropriate environment, or they can't get the support that they need, or even with support, their child is still struggling. And so we have to, again, have a conversation about what things can we do and put in place to help that child be more successful and to really enjoy the learning experience. You know, right. Oftentimes it's not about, you know, can I get my child better grades in this class? It's about, does my child, you know, feel motivated to continue learning? Are they enjoying the learning experience? I mean, that is even more important than what the grade is.
Yeah. So, oh my gosh, I have so many thoughts right now about what you're saying. Could go in a million directions. Probably some you don't even want to talk about, but it might put you in a compromising position. But one of the things you just said really sparked something with me, which was, I have three kids, and we've had neuropsych testing done, and each one has a little bit of a different cocktail of what their issues are. But I remember when they were little and feeling like, okay, we found our neuropsychologist, like I can breathe now, right? Because mm-hmm. you've been through such a journey already. You've probably been to your pediatrician, developmental pediatrician, like the school's kicked out some things. You've seen some things, and you're mm-hmm. saying to yourself, like, this is not, doesn't seem typical. And so it was like, oh, okay. But then it didn't occur to me in the big picture how much more of a journey, like I'm still running that ball down to the end of the field, because to your point, you really have to get the whole, like say IEP team on board. It's not just sitting in that first meeting and saying, we found, you know, here are the results. I feel like every year I'm sitting down with every teacher and having to communicate with them. This is what's in that report. This is how my child learns well. This is what you'll start to see if they're getting uncomfortable or, you know, something else is going on. And please make sure with the 30 kids, you're going to pay attention to mine, because mine needs a little extra something, something. And it's so much. And then, oh, by the way, I've got to come back to you now because it's been a couple years and we need to do the assessments again. And the schools mm-hmm. might say one thing and you need a bigger picture and more detail. And so it just doesn't stop.
And as
it doesn't stop.
And as a parent, you need to remember, like, I find myself always going back to those reports that both my kids have had, the neuropsych reports, and I forget, like, all these,
oh,
like,
gosh, all the time.
And I'm like, I'll go back to it. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be doing that. I'm supposed right. to, like, giving him that extra time, or he's better off, like, he doesn't learn the learning comprehension so well. He needs to listen to it. And all these little tips that, you know, we've received that, you know, you tell the teachers, and but then you forget.
Right. I feel like I want to hug that document, that 15 pages or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's you've just really nailed it on the head, because it's not one of those things you can just read once and then just put in a drawer. You have to revisit it, you know. And
my binder is now like this big. Nobody can see me, of course, but like my arms are huge and wide, because I have like the elementary binder, the middle school binder, the testing one, testing two.
You're way too organized.
And I think it's really important to not only revisit it regularly, and then to also, if you're employing these interventions, to check in to see how much your child is benefiting from the intervention, because some of the recommendations may no longer be applicable, right? Mm-hmm. If your child has really made significant improvements in a particular area, then you need to fine tune, which is the purpose of meeting and checking in with therapists and educators. This is working, or he no longer is responding to this reward program. And then you need to change and try something new. Because, the neuropsych assessment tells you kind of where your child was in a moment in time.
Right.
And kind of gives you a plan for moving forward. But your child is developing and growing and learning and getting better at things, and new things are popping up. So it's a roadmap, but it's not the end of the road, right? It's just the beginning.
Yeah. It's a tool. I always look at it like it's this toolkit for this point in time. And Rachel and I have had this conversation. It happens with the schools a lot, where say your child was dyslexic, like we've had this issue, and they come up to grade level. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's this, you kind of feel like you might lose your IEP, or there's some slippage in the moment, but that doesn't mean that they're cured.
Right.
Because then all of a sudden, in our example, like math started to become a challenge where it wasn't before, because it's more word problems and the core curriculum wants them to write things out, and writing is a problem. So then there's so many steps involved that their brain is short circuiting again.
Right.
And, and so there are different plateaus that they reach as they continue to progress, that where that's not going away. It's just sometimes it's further in the background than it once was, maybe.
That is true. And that's why you have to do reevaluations, even if it's not a full reevaluation, because the academic demands are going to continue to increase. The cognitive demands are going to continue to change. And you have to revisit what it is that your child needs at different points in time, right? I think about the kindergartner, that first grader who is really struggling with phonological processing and is identified as meeting criteria for dyslexia or an ADHD, but by third grade, they've learned how to read, but now they're having difficulty with reading comprehension. And so the recommendations are going to change, because the expectations have changed, right?
So is that what happens to the kid? Is that what happens in third grade? Just
third grade to take care.
It can.
All right, I need to be aware of that.
It can happen. And so, again, the recommendations would change, because early on, those recommendations for kindergarten might have been focused on phonological processing and reading fluency. But now we have to have different recommendations and different interventions as we're targeting kids who are reading to learn.
Right. So how often do you recommend testing then? I know there's certain guidelines by whether or not they're taking standardized tests and all that kind of stuff, but what does that program look like for someone, say, that if they come to you with an early intervention, you see them and you test them in, say, first grade, then what happens?
It depends on the kid. For some kids, it's you're just retesting in that targeted area of the intervention. So for example, if a kid is really struggling with the alphabet and has all the markers of having, early dyslexia, then after a year, you might do some reading tests to see where they are. Has the intervention worked? Do we need to continue this level of intervention? Can we pull back a little bit? So we wouldn't do a full neuropsychological evaluation. We'd be very targeted in terms of what we're looking at. And sometimes you might do it at the end of the academic year. For example, if a child is going to be, for example, going into third grade on the next academic year, we want to know, well, what should we be focusing on over the summer to prepare them for third grade? And they have a history of struggles with reading and writing. Well, let's see where they are. Okay, is this where we want to spend our time, or is it okay for them to just take a break and do, some other kind of science camp, and they'll be okay when they start third grade? So oftentimes that's a good time to, right at the towards the end of the academic year to see what do you need to do during the summer to prepare them for next year.
That's a great tip. So I know, like, with I keep going back to my son, who I was very fortunate to get diagnosed with dyslexia going into, for, I think he was in kindergarten, sorry. So he had very targeted work done for him, and he, going into first grade, he was reading at grade level, so we pulled back. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, you know, as we go forward, it's good to know, like, what we should be looking to do.
Yes.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Great. I keep, Rachel and I keep going back and forth because I'm her future. She's my past. I'm her future.
And she can always tell me what not to worry about and what to like get really gung-ho about.
Like, oh, forget that. That's not going to matter, but go over here.
Well, I messed up on that. So you please don't.
I was like, let me show you what tragedy looks like.
Well, it's so great that you have each other.
Thank God.
That's how we found each other and decided we were going to try to help somebody with this if we could.
We also end up being the people that our friends call a lot. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, anyway, but so can we take a little turn and start talking about where we are today? Like, we're all in different places.
We can.
I think, I know I'm struggling with this a little bit with two kids with IEPs. And, you know, we talked a little bit before we started about, you know, now the kids are at home, which mm-hmm. means all that special ed, all the stuff that you've worked out with the schools is happening in a different way. Maybe some schools are doing it by Zoom. Our schools are doing it by me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know the world's upside down right now and it's not perfect, and that's okay. You know, it's okay. Roll with it. But I think a lot of people want to know, like, what can give, what can't give, and what's really important for these kids that aren't neurotypical.
Right. I think first and foremost, it's understanding that this is a challenging time. And, you know, we keep hearing it's unprecedented and it's a struggle and our lives have been upended, and that is all true. But we have to, as parents and as educators and as therapists, maintain a, you know, some calmness in the midst of this chaos, right? For the kids who are struggling, because a lot of them have benefited from and needed structure. Mm-hmm. And now that has been taken away from them.
Yeah.
And so we need to provide that sense of peace and that calm, again, in the midst of so much uncertainty for them. And that may mean, you know, not feeling pressured to replicate the school and therapy at home. Right? We do the best that we can. We have to give ourselves a little bit of grace, be kind to ourselves, and really prioritize what is the most important thing for my child to take away over the next 3 months.
So how do you do that when everything that's been told to me up till now was mm-hmm. be the loving parent, be their support, you know, provide the calmness and the sort of the tranquil environment as best you can at home, because things are so hard for these kids out in the real world. Mm-hmm. And now we're putting it all in their home. Like, how do you, so like, what gives?
I think that doesn't change. I think that you still have to foster calm, and that has to be for first and foremost. So if a child is having a meltdown in front of the Zoom, you know, intervention, then you stop the Zoom intervention and you pay attention to what your child is telling you. Mm-hmm. And that might be that this is too stressful. I've been sitting in front of a computer screen for too long. Whatever it is, you need to be in tune to whatever your child is experiencing and be willing to be flexible at more so than ever before.
So do we just like let go of the interventions?
Yeah. No, I wouldn't say that you have to absolutely abandon interventions, but it might be that your 60-minute OT is now 30 minutes. Right? Because how long can you do OT in front of a Zoom screen? Right? And so that might have to change in terms of what that intervention looks like. It might be 15 minutes a day over 4 days, as opposed to one 60-minute Zoom session of OT. And so I think we have to, again, it all comes down to flexibility and really being in tune to how your child is responding to the shift and this change. and having discussions with teachers and therapists in terms of what do I need to prioritize right now? Where is my child's biggest struggle? And that's where you focus your intervention. But again, fostering a sense of calm is first and foremost. And a lot of that comes from first taking care of ourselves. We have to really do a lot of self-care because it's very hard to parent and then also step into a role of educator, simultaneously step into a role of educator when we are stressed.
Right.
Right.
Not to mention the, don't forget to clean the house.
And yes.
All the other things in work and
right.
Everything else you're doing.
Right. Absolutely. For those people who are also working from home, it's a challenge. Like, how do you sit beside your child and help them engage in distance learning while you are also working from home? Mm-hmm. It's an impossible situation for
most
people.
How are the teachers able to be present or teach or mm-hmm. interact? Because a lot of them are probably taking care of their own families and their own situations, and teaching is not an easy task. And then throw in IEPs and, you know, different children and different families. And now I would think you have parents all over them.
Yes. And a lot of parents chose their careers because that's what they wanted to do. A lot of parents didn't choose to be teachers for a reason.
Right.
Right. And now they're in that role.
And homeschooling was never for me.
Right. Exactly. And for most parents, that has been the case. So this is a whole new world for them. And for some parents, this is the first time they are spending extended periods of time with their children, you know, over weeks and months. And
right.
So they're actually better able to kind of tune into what some of the things that the teachers might have been experiencing. And, you know, we talked initially about reading through that neuropsych report that you have. And yeah. Now's a good time to do
go
that.
Back.
Yes, it's a good time to look at what those recommendations were. Oh, I had stretching breaks in there during the day. And, you know, we had all of those things. You know, we have to employ some of those and take those things into consideration now more than ever.
Maybe parents can also put into practice some of the things the schools were resistant to. Like, I know one of the things that we always tried to do was let our son chew gum. Mm-hmm.
That's a good idea.
Through straws, because that helped calm and with focus and a lot of things. And some of the teachers were like, no can do. We cannot have a child chewing gum in the class. Let's talk about other modalities that they could potentially use. But we really always wanted the gum.
And now you can do it.
Now we can have gum, although it's going to be everywhere.
Right. And you might need to take more breaks. Kids might need more breaks, right?
Yeah.
They need more breaks to step outside or go for a walk and come back, or go in the backyard and come back. And they now can do that. So we have the opportunity to kind of tailor their learning environment to what it is that they need.
We're right? just using bribery here. It's all about bribery. It's like, okay, do 30 minutes of work. Okay, you want to go do Prodigy? You want to go on Roblox?
Yes.
A little bit, please.
Yeah, we're paying ours. We're paying
off. It's all about flexibility, right? We're not trying to, impossible to replicate what they would be doing at school.
Yep. We right. found what they were after and we went straight for it. Yep. With one of them, it was hard cash.
Well, what can he buy right now?
Oh, he's trying to buy things online.
Okay.
So not, he doesn't actually want the cash. He wants it PayPal'd. So then he can use his debit card.
It's like, how can you motivate your children?
I know. Along the way, we're also trying to teach them laundry, cooking, all the things that no one ever had time for before. We're trying to instill, right. I'm trying to think what the word is, practical life skills that they don't really right. teach anymore in school. We're teaching that here.
Right.
Your kids are older. Don't make me feel bad, because my kids, I can barely get them like,
I know. I remember, Rachel. I'm so sorry. I think every day that I've passed that, I'm so sorry.
She was on the phone with me earlier today while my son was screaming and crying that he could not do his work. He's 7.
Oh.
And he didn't want to get on, and he just got so frustrated and so mad. He's a kid that like loves he needs the structure and he needs the social stuff to keep him engaged and to, you know, do well in school. And that's what holds him together. And now that's completely gone.
Right.
Do you have any recommendations for that, for these kids that are super social and that need more interaction? I mean, I would assume get on with your friends in Zoom and try to, but is there anything else? Like, what can we do?
Yeah, it's really tough within this time of social distancing and stay-at-home orders. I mean, you can't, you know, meet with friends. And, you know, I know what some parents have done is that they've kind of arranged play dates with that 6 feet distancing, which is hard to do because kids just want to run and touch and grab their friends. So I don't know if that would work for all kids. Some parents have taken their kids to a beach and had the kids sit 6 feet apart and had snacks together, right? So that's something that the kids could do.
Yeah.
Also, you know, again, play dates via Zoom.
Right.
I'm going to show you my room. You can show me your room. A show and tell via Zoom where kids take turns taking something from the room and showing their friends and talking about it and things like that so that they can, again, continue to maintain some social interaction.
That's right. A great idea. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've been trying to do, which I don't know, some people probably don't like it, but we've been trying to do like projects or baked things, or let's find a family that we can give something to and leave it on their front porch and, and we'll ding dong ditch them.
That's great too. And also, if they have friends in their neighborhood, they can drive by their friend's house and say, you know, I'm going to come by at 4 o'clock, and you go outside and then you call on the cell phone, you honk the horn, they talk through the window and they wave at each other. I mean, there's different ways that we can kind of maintain that
great idea
and that connection.
I also put a dartboard in my living room and decided to worry about the wall later. We're learning darts now. We didn't have that before.
You've got to do what you got to do.
That could work with older kids. My kids, I'm going to get injured.
I know. You would need like a batting cage.
I know. And our neighbors have one, but you know, can't go up there.
I know. It's tough.
Closed. Now, we've been telling our kids that if they bike to their friends' houses, because that gets them outside to do some activity.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we can call their friends to, you know, come out and wave.
Yes.
So and there's great. There are a lot of classes now that are free online. Like, we've downloaded some different applications or different programs from gyms or whatnot where they can do little exercises or, you know, things that they're interested in to get some of the willies out in the living room.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's really important. I think it's also important because they're going to be spending more time in front of screens to get outside as much as possible. It's just so important.
What do you recommend for the screen time issue? Because
question.
That's a big one.
I think it's tough. I think that now, I mean, it's a limited amount of time. We're hoping that this will be 3, hopefully no more than 4 months, but we don't know. So, I mean, I think that the screen time limitations have got to change temporarily.
Yeah.
So I don't know if I have a number. I think it depends on the child. It depends on self-regulation issues. But we don't want them in front of the screens all day. Right. So we have to be.
I have teenagers. I'm not worrying as much as I used to. I'm just trying to get diversity within my week with them, not so much in every day, because every day I'm noticing emotions go up and down a little bit with everyone.
Right.
But so, you know, at least we're trying to mix it up, and I look at it in a bigger time frame, mostly for all of our sanity, because I think otherwise we'd be fighting all the time about
exactly
what's going on.
Right. I think mixing it up is really important. You know, you switch between a board game to let's all make dinner together to, you know, let's go for a family walk, or let's go for a drive and we'll all be in the car. We won't get out. Or what we've done is we've done a picnic in the car. So we drive somewhere and we have our little picnic basket and we eat in the car.
That's
and then we
great.
Drive back home. Right. And so you just find ways to be out there outside, engaging in different activities as much as possible.
Do you have any recommendations for parents on how they can get self-care during this period of time to stay on top of this?
Yeah, I think that you have to find times of day that is just yours. Even if it means, for me, it's getting up before the kids get up in the morning, before anyone is up. And so it's just like this glorious hour of quiet where everybody is up before you turn on your phone and before you check, you know, how many coronavirus cases there are this month. It's just that time of peace where you do whatever it is that you need to do, whether it's meditation, whether it's reading a book, having that first cup of coffee in quiet and peace, sitting on the front deck, whatever it might be, to have that time for yourself.
Yeah.
And then also making sure you have time for exercise, because it's good for emotions. There's a lot of anxiety. There's a lot of stress. And the research shows that stress unchecked can have long-term difficulties for individuals in terms of affecting mental and physical health down the road. So we want to make sure that we are reducing our stress responses as much as possible. So meditation, mindfulness, exercise, and taking that time for yourselves, whether it be at the beginning of the day, the middle of the day, the end of the day, it's really important to have that time.
For me, it's the end of the day. I stay up too late, but that's when everyone's asleep and I can watch bad TV. I can read it for 10 minutes, just nothing.
Right. Yeah. And the other thing is to really minimize the amount of exposure to media coverage of this situation, because that can create a stress response. And, you know, a lot of people are experiencing panic attacks for the first time or increased heart rate. And then they're starting to think, you know, they have difficulty breathing and they start thinking, is this coronavirus? But it's really anxiety because they've been spending, you know, 2 hours watching CNN coverage of the coronavirus situation. So we have to limit the amount of media exposure to this pandemic coverage.
Yeah, I think that's important, because every time you put on a television now, that's all you're seeing, and it's really hard to escape it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And even notifications on your phone. I mean, if you, you might have to turn those off, because it maybe you have the television off, but then you're getting these news notifications telling you, you know, what's happening. So that also, something you want to check.
Yeah. And I think also having your children overhear that or see that, we take for granted what level of development their brain is in and whether they can actually handle, I mean, you would know better than I, but how you could actually handle this. How are they processing this information in their little brains? You know, very difficult.
Absolutely. And then you also want to give them an opportunity to talk about their feelings and what it is that they've heard that's happening. How do they feel about it? So you can help them process those emotions. That's really important as well. And to not do it just once. You know, if you notice some regression in behaviors, some challenges that have seemed more intense than they were before, it may be their response to the stress of this situation and this change in their routine. And that's why we want to make sure that we're in tune to what it is they're experiencing and feeling, because they may not have the language to tell you.
It's funny. So that's a great point. My 7-year-old is, he keeps going back to when he doesn't want to do schoolwork. He keeps talking about this one thing at school, at school. He can't work on his writing because his writing is at school in that yellow notebook. Mm-hmm. And he needs to go back to school to do it, because that's where you do it.
Right.
And I know it's like that. He can't tell me he's sad and he misses school and everything. He just holds on to, like, that's how things are done.
Exactly.
And that's his way of sharing it. And you're like, oh, I know. I know.
And they're probably stressed because of how they've been structured to perform, right? And those, all that has changed on them. And I feel like, at least for me as a parent, I'm trying only to stay in like the day or a couple days of talking about this, because I can't say to my 8th grader, you're going to be at your 8th grade graduation this year. And I can't say to my senior that she's going to her graduation this year. And, you know, for these little kids, like, they just don't, we just don't know. So if we let ourselves continue to go forward, we don't have an end date. We don't know what's going to happen. This is a very unusual, you know, historic moment in a period of time in our lives. And so if you continue to go down that path of the future, it's very scary. So I keep trying to back it up. Like, let's just talk about today and tomorrow.
Right. And that's where you might need to focus on, is what is happening right now. And, you know, most people, what they want to do is they want to feel safe and they want to feel secure. So what can we do in our home environments to foster that? Right. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like, okay, we're going to stop doing math homework now. Let's go bake some cookies. Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you just switch and you do something else that brings joy.
Right. Yeah. No, that's great. Mm-hmm. All right.
Well, thank you so much. I'm going to need to go because I hear the rumblings at my door that I'm like holding off. But this has been so helpful. It's so great to be able to talk to you and hear your awesome tips and about what you're doing. I really, really enjoyed this.
It's been great talking to you both as well.
Yeah. And are you, do you have resources on your website and things that we can point people to?
I do. There are a couple articles right now that are posted in terms of parenting in the midst of a pandemic. Okay. So they're posted on the childnexus.com website under articles. And then parents can also sign up for updates on that on childnexus.com, and they'll get newsletters, a monthly newsletter. The last two have really focused on listing resources for families who find themselves, you know, having to homeschool, deliver distance learning, and support their kids during this time.
Rachel and I would like to thank everyone for tuning in today, and especially to Dr. Karen Wilson for spending her time and giving us such valuable information. You can get her contact info from us on our Twitter page at Podcast Chaos or on our Facebook page, Constant Chaos Podcast. Thank you so much, and hope you're surviving these chaotic times.